This is Brendan Lyons with the Times Union. I am joined today by Ed McKinley and Emily Munson, who is in our Washington Bureau. Ed is a member of our Capitol Bureau in Albany. We are on the cusp of what many people believe is the most important election in a generation. We are voting amid a global pandemic, and millions of people are casting ballots this year through absentee or mail-in ballots. There are so many extraordinary circumstances surrounding the election this year, the presidential election in particular, and Ed and Emily sought to answer questions that we believe many voters may have about what to expect in this election and what will come in the days, weeks, even months that follow in terms of any uncertainty on the candidate and who is selected as president. Guys, I'm going to start off, and you jump in and answer them as you see fit. But one of the questions that we have posed is, what's the state of the presidential race as we head into Election Day, and what are some of the key states that voters should pay attention to?
Sure. Well, I'll go ahead and field this one. This is Ed speaking. The main thing to know, you know, the bird's eye view perspective is that from what we can tell, Biden is winning the race right now ahead of Trump. He's up by somewhere between 7.5 and 9 points nationally, according to the Real Clear polling average and 538, which are two of the most authoritative polling averages that we have. But as we learned in 2016, or as Al Gore learned in 2000, this isn't a national election. You don't win just by getting the most votes. You need to win more than 270 electoral votes, which you do by winning states. So it's really more of an election where it's a series of statewide elections happening at the same time. Most states are either reliably blue, like California or New York, or reliably red, like Idaho, Arkansas, Tennessee. And the states that ultimately decide the election are the swing states in the middle. The six closest main swing states to watch this year, and in all of them, from what we can tell, Biden has anywhere between a small to a moderate lead, are Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, Michigan, Arizona, Florida, and North Carolina.
And the polls are, I believe, Ed, a little tighter there in those states, right? So it's not as clear a path to victory for Biden in those states.
Yeah, so if you look at Trump's polling numbers nationally and his popularity with voters across the country, those numbers are better in the states that are more likely to decide the election, which suggests that Trump's best path to victory would be winning the Electoral College without winning the popular vote this time. It's extremely unlikely, if you look at the historical polling misses that have happened, that the national polls would be off enough for Trump to win the national vote.
And certainly in 2016, Trump seemed to have a similar strategy of really pursuing the states to win the Electoral College, foregoing any idea that he might win the popular vote. It seems that there's that similar strategy is unfolding this year as well for him.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's really important to note that although by every possible sign that we have, you know, votes that are already counted, polls that we have, signs of voter enthusiasm, fundraising, Biden is winning, that doesn't mean that the race is over. Trump still has a very, very real chance of winning. You know, election models are putting it anywhere between a 5 and 10% chance. But as we saw in 2016, you know, upsets happen, underdogs win, it can definitely happen. But the thing to know is that the polls are far enough in Biden's favor this year that we wouldn't be talking about a normal level polling miss in terms of the historical perspective, like we saw in 2016, which was in line with polling misses that you see every 8 years or whatever. We would be talking about one of the biggest polling misses in history. And by nature, the polls are just as likely to miss in Joe Biden's direction as they would be in Trump's direction. So we shouldn't assume just because the polls missed for Trump last time that they're going to miss in the same direction, same time.
So many voters are used to and accustomed to on election night, they sit down with their popcorn and a beverage around 9 o'clock and they start watching the returns come in. And by the time you go to bed sometimes, 11, 12, you've got a certain idea of who a winner is. When will we know this year who's going to win the White House, do you think?
So the very first thing you should know is that it's unlikely on election night that we will definitively know who has won the presidential election. There will be signs earlier in the night. The polls start closing at 6 p.m. Eastern in the first states. Most of them will be closed by 10, except for the West Coast ballots. We're expecting to get results from Arizona and Florida, which, as we said earlier, are swing states. So if things are headed very much in Biden's direction, we will have a good idea that we're headed toward a Biden victory. But if Trump starts winning those early swing states, we could be headed for a long night, and we could be headed toward days, weeks, or even months of counting mail ballots as they come in and of election challenges and all sorts of other shenanigans.
Many people are bracing for the idea that one of the candidates will declare themselves a winner, even though the results are still undetermined. I don't think that's likely to happen, given that both sides know what's expected to happen in the weeks that follow, that there are so many mail-in ballots that are going to play into this. But what if that does happen? What if Trump comes out and says, I'm the winner, or Biden does the preemptive strike, right, to do that? What do you think could happen if that takes place?
This is Emily. So when a candidate declares victory, that's not a binding statement in any way. That's an important thing for voters to know. You know, the winner of the election is going to be determined by all of the ballots being tallied, certified, and audited by election officials across the country. And that's really a weeks-long process. But on election night, you know, there's a possibility that early in the night, the tallies coming in from the polls will be looking good for Republicans based on in-person ballots being cast and the fact that more Democrats are opting to vote by mail this year than Republicans are at the national level across the country. So it's possible that there could be an early red mirage, the illusion of a Republican blowout, followed by a blue wave of more Democratic votes coming in as those mail-in ballots counted. And so if a candidate declared victory in those early hours when it appeared one side might be ahead before all the ballots are counted, that statement's essentially meaningless. And, you know, it might be met with widespread skepticism, especially by news outlets who will present this as an early statement, not backed up by the full vote tally. But it also could be a candidate tactic that someone might declare an early victory as an attempt to set up later legal challenges to the results. President Donald Trump, for example, has already said he doesn't think ballots should be counted after Election Day. But in many places, absentee ballots will be counted for days after Election Day. And so a statement of early victory could be part of his legal strategy to make challenges to results later down the road and generally sow doubts about the result of the election.
One important thing to know, too, is that it's not unique to 2020 that ballots will need to be counted in the days or even weeks after the election. States with a lot of mail-in votes in the past, California in 2018, it took a while to count a lot of votes, for instance, it happens. And the votes that are counted later, some will attempt to frame them as flipping the election result, as though the election result had been decided on election night and the legitimate votes that are not counted until later had changed the result. But the truth is, we don't have a result until we count all legitimate votes. No result exists until we know what the final picture is. So it's not flipping it, it's just filling in that picture.
So does the president oppose counting votes after Election Day or counting votes that are received after Election Day?
I think it's fair to say the president has generally supported the more restrictive possible interpretations of election laws throughout this election cycle. He's sort of framed it as more expansive access to voting, be it through mail or early voting, is led by Democrats in order to benefit themselves electorally, while he has supported more stringent restrictions on, you know, making sure that all votes are thoroughly vetted and delivered in the most specific way.
Trump on Wednesday said, quote, hopefully the few states remaining that want to take a lot of time after November 3rd to count ballots, that won't be allowed by the various courts. So he's made multiple statements both in person and on Twitter suggesting that states should not be allowed to count ballots after Election Day, which in fact is a normal part of the electoral process. Often counting ballots takes time beyond Election Day.
Okay, we're going to take a short break and we'll be right back.
If you're enjoying this podcast, take advantage of all the Times Union has to offer and support our efforts to bring in you award-winning journalism by becoming a Times Union member today. Go to timesunion.com/subscribe.
Hi, I'm Casey Seiler, editor of the Times Union. Join us for an ongoing discussion on major developments in the saga of Keith Raniere, co-founder of Nexium, the shadowy upstate New York organization at the center of the explosive federal investigation that resulted in his conviction on charges of extortion, sex trafficking, and more. We talk to former members of Nexium, discuss the latest news, and preview the likely next twists in this bizarre and disturbing story. You can find Nexium on Trial at timesunion.com or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Okay, we're back. And again, this is Brendan Lyons with the Times Union, and I am talking with Ed McKinley from the State Bureau and Emily Munson, who is a correspondent for the Hearst Corporation in Washington, D.C. So, Emily, this week the Times Union received press releases already from groups, you know, in the days leading up to the election, indicating that they are ready to begin protests the day after in anticipation that there may be an outcome they don't like or an indication of votes that aren't being properly counted and people are not having their voices heard at the ballot box. So what's the worst case scenario, do you think, for post-election chaos?
After election night, we may see widespread protests across the country or in certain states as a result of the way that the election results are heading, or delays in counting ballots, or various court battles that may occur around the country. And it's a near certainty that we'll see lawsuits challenging election procedures, like the way ballots are counted, or making challenges to some of the results in other ways. We've already seen some of these legal challenges start. For example, the Supreme Court has had three recent rulings that affected when absentee ballots can be counted based on when they're received. In Pennsylvania and North Carolina, the Supreme Court ruled that absentee ballots can be counted in those states after Election Day, as long as they're postmarked by Election Day. But it made a different decision in the case of Wisconsin, and that decision decided that no absentee ballots received after Election Day will be counted in that state. So we're likely to see many, many more lawsuits. And in a final scenario, which is less likely than the other two that we've just discussed, is if neither presidential candidate wins 270 Electoral College votes, that's the magic number that you need to win to assume the presidency, or if results of the popular vote are still unclear on December 14th, which is the day that state electors get together, meet, and cast their ballots, then one or more state legislatures could theoretically decide how their state's Electoral College votes should be cast. Now, the state legislature would make the decision about those Electoral College votes, and then it would be the job of the newly elected Congress to accept those Electoral College votes when they gather in January. And the House would take jurisdiction over holding a vote to accept the Electoral College votes for the presidency, and the Senate actually oversees the vice presidency. And there's a whole kind of complicated process about how this would work. In the House, state delegations are really key in this. So having representatives hold a majority of states by party, so Democrats, or Republicans is a key. You may have heard comments from Speaker Nancy Pelosi about that. And in the Senate, each senator has one vote. So probably don't need to get farther into that at that point, but that could be an unlikely but possible scenario after Election Day if no one wins an Electoral College majority.
That probably should have gone in the nightmare scenario.
Right on. So, Ed, there are different scenarios that could unfold after this election. One is that Trump retains his presidency, but he loses the Senate, and therefore he has an entire Congress that would be pitted against him. Another scenario is Biden wins, but the Republicans in the Senate retain their hold on it, and they have some very close races and some work against them. So what could happen there? What are some of the scenarios that could unfold with this election?
Well, the short answer is that the House is going to stay blue, almost for sure. The Democrats took a pretty wide majority in 2018, and it's very, very unlikely. Really, no one is anticipating that the Republicans have any chance of making up the 30-ish seats that they would need to. And a lot of election modelers are expecting the Democrats to possibly even take another couple seats. So really, the focus in terms of Congress for this election is on the Senate. In the Senate, the Democrats are down 3 seats, so they either need to flip 4 seats or flip the 3 and then the presidency because the vice president breaks the ties. They have a bit of an advantage going in because there are 23 Republicans who are up for re-election this year and only 12 Democrats, which means that the Republicans have to defend more seats than the Democrats, giving the Democrats more spots to flip seats. There are a number of close races. Alabama, Michigan, Maine, Iowa, Montana, North Carolina, South Carolina, Colorado, and then 2 in Georgia. So ultimately, it's going to come down to a bunch of coin flip races or races where someone has a slight lead, and it's hard to tell how that might play out. If you look at different models or even at betting markets, they expect the Democrats to have more of a likelihood than the Republicans to go into next year having the control of the Senate. And one thing to know is that it's very unlikely that Democrats would perform well enough in this election to win back the Senate and Joe Biden would not be elected president. So if Trump is reelected, almost certainly we would be talking about a Republican Senate, Republican president, and a Democratic-controlled House, just because of how the electoral math would work out. And then one final thing to know, in case this election hasn't been enough for you, Georgia has a special rule where if no candidate wins more than 50% of the vote, the top 2 vote-getters advance to an election on January 5th. So if the Senate is tied 50-50 or 49-49 on election night with all the races called, and Georgia has 2 races, and those advance to the runoffs, there could be a special January 5th election, winner take all, to control the Senate. So we might have that to look forward to.
Well, I want to thank Ed McKinley, who is a member of our Capitol Bureau in Albany, and Emily Munson, who is a correspondent for the Hearst Corporation in Washington. You can look to timesunion.com, please, to subscribe and also find out the latest on what's happening with the election.